Oh, my gosh. We've got a real live state representative here. Wow, how about that? Local Representative Carrie Benninghoff. Hello.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Right into the end of that thing there, all right? We're sort of restarting our series talking with local elected officials. We had Democrat Paul Takac on Friday. We've got Republican Carrie Benninghoff today, and we've got more folks coming up. So, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. No complaints. Glad to be here. Glad you're taking time to keep people up to date with what's going on.
No complaints.
I woke up today. That's a good start.
that is a good start. I have a list. If you're looking for some help on the complaint department, I keep compiling them.
Well, we're generally the receiving end of complaints, so there's no time for me to have complaints.
All right.
Which is fine.
Well, we're definitely going to ask about views on Rockview, but let me save what's Rockview? Yeah, nice try. We're going to save that for later. We're going to save that for later. Let's just, I don't know, just an open-ended, kind of wide open general question. Your view on what's happening in Harrisburg right now. You know, you like this, you don't like that. Oh, you have no complaints, which is bull. All right. Just your view on the state of state government right now. What's going on?
You know, it's easy, like I said, to say there's no complaints, but frankly, so how you choose to accept things that come to you that you may not necessarily like. You know, we're in a business that's about trying to compromise, find solutions to things, but you're always going to have differing opinions. As I try to tell my own children, differing opinions doesn't necessarily mean one person's wrong and one person's right. We just have different opinions about things. As you may know, there was a special election on Tuesday, which has changed the majority in the House by one vote again. Paul and I jokingly tell people we can't cross the street together because we could change the outcome of what the majority is by pushing one of them in front of a car.
Whoa, so, don't do that, no.
all joking aside, you know, we're a very close margin in the House, 101-102, and so obviously the current administration that's running the House obviously happens to be the Democrats. You know, they've been running relatively benign issues in order to get that majority back. The Senate, surprisingly, had a loss Tuesday night as well in Lancaster, which was somewhat of a surprise. So they're a majority of 27-23, so they have a little bit of a buffer. But nonetheless, we're in the middle of budget season where the governor gives a proposal. A lot of people think governor gives a budget, and that's going to be the budget for the year, but they don't realize the governor cannot introduce legislation. He can have all kinds of ideas, but he's got to get people within the legislature to pick up those ideas and actually want to run with them. Whether you agree or disagree, there's a significant amount more spending in the budget, which is going to always cause some wrangling. We saw about a $2.5 billion increase last year, and there's a request for an additional $3.6 billion. So that causes some angst about where to go, where to find that money. I find it interesting when other levels of government are struggling financially, they come to state government, and we have a tendency to look to federal government to see more money come from one other direction. But at the end of the day, I remind our younger members, you know, if you've ever done any concrete eventually sets up when it wants to. You can play with it all you want. And the budget process is somewhat the same. You got to massage it, you got to trowel it, you got to work with it, but it eventually comes together. And some people get stuck on the magic date of June 30th, which statutorily is when it is to be done. But you're still paying taxes on July 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The big question is, how much more do you want to spend one day after the old budget goes away? We've tried passing caveats in the past that says if for some reason you don't meet the deadline of June 30, you automatically work off the budget of last year. To me, that makes common sense. You folks are doing it every day. So we'll get there. That's really the majority of things. We have all kinds of other issues that come before us. The bigger one, not bigger than the budget, but the more common one we're hearing about so much is lack of employees everywhere. I don't care what the industry is. They're struggling. If you go downtown Harrisburg, a lot of restaurants have closed because they just don't have the staff. The one who runs three restaurants kind of adjacent to each other, their high point had 47 employees. They're trying to run two of the three now with 14 employees, offering more money than they ever had in the past, but they just can't keep up with the challenges of the workforce.
And the reason for that is what? These restaurants?
The reason is restaurant work is not easy. It's a lot of hard hours, a lot of preparatory hours. Many of them working 14 hours a day where they could go work at a convenience store for almost the same amount of money. Some of the larger convenience stores that we have been blessed with around here actually can offer pretty significant benefits. And when you're offering not only health care, but college tuitions assistant, it's pretty hard to keep somebody to come in and say, hey, I need you to prep for lunch today, but I need you at 5 a.m. to be chopping up vegetables and whatever it is that they do. And it was sad. I mean, like I said, I walked down through town the other day, and I thought, wow, that one's closed, that one's closed, that one's closed. And a lot of that is a result of the working from home. And even in our industry, where most of the time you have to have people present within the legislature, the legislators may be there, some of our staff, but you know, the governor has continued some of the allowing employees to work 3 days in person, 2 days not. And subsidiaries that we work with, different associations, lobbying organizations, a lot of them have taken advantage of that too. It's pretty easy to downsize your footprint as far as office space if you're a large percentage of your employees can work remotely. And in return, we're seeing the spinoff effect for those businesses that depended on that foot traffic coming in and out.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask about that Senate election in Lancaster, but let's go back to the 102-101.
Yes.
How often does it happen all 101 vote the same, all 102 vote the same? That it seems to happen frequently. Is that if somebody breaks off from the 102 or the 101, what are they, thrown out of the building or something? How often does that happen?
It happens probably more than you think, only because of two things. One, there's a lot of issues we actually do agree on. Some of them are relatively benign issues. I thought it was pretty interesting and almost frustrating when I had, I think, two or four members of my own caucus who voted against my resolution to honor Thon and students to raise $17 million. Now, we do have a handful of people who vote against resolutions. They're a non-binding kind of document. It's more ceremonial and honoring. It's not legislative. And for some reason, then they pound their chest about the fact, oh, I don't sign on any resolutions until it's my resolution. And I actually challenged two of them on that one time because I know one has them coming because it's coming through my committee. And I said, what are you going to do when I resolve? Well, I'm going to vote for that. And I said, so you think all the other members should vote for your resolution when, since you've been here from day one, you vote against everything? But back to the unanimous vote, I give the Democrats credit. They circle the wagons a little bit better sometimes. As Republicans, I think we pride ourselves on being independent-minded and self-supportive and all that kind of jazz. But in return, sometimes we get in our own way, and we don't unify as easily. And in return, when you have a one-vote margin, everybody's king, and we need every one of those votes. And that's very, very frustrating.
All right, now this state Senate election, I guess a special election in Lancaster County, which is a pretty red area, allegedly, I've got one story here. This is an area that Donald Trump won by 15 points last year, but somehow the Democrat won this Senate race, and allegedly it's Donald Trump's fault, which this was a state Senate race, not a U.S. Senate. This was Donald Trump's fault. Now, first off, you mentioned it was an upset, so I assume you keep track of Senate. You're in the House.
Sure.
Was this a big surprise, and was this Donald Trump's fault?
Well, number one, it is not Donald Trump's fault. It's amazing. People are always wanting to point, you know, blame to someone, and you know, a non-tangible person in Washington is always easier to do that. But outside of that, number one, special elections are fast and furious. They happen quickly. And I think subsequent of the national election and those who may be supportive of the current administration, some of them got lazy and didn't turn out. And so you have less turnout a lot of times in special elections. You have maybe a candidate that may have had a little more baggage and may not have been known better than the other candidate. I don't know a lot about the specific candidates. I'm working off a little bit of what I've heard from some of my friends down there. In Lancaster, it is a very red area, but it may be several shades of red.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you're not as conservative as I am. You don't vote for liberty enough. And so if you aren't necessarily the right color red, they may not support you. And it's very, very frustrating. The other thing I think you have to take in consideration is you had a third party in that. And if you look at the vote total, the Libertarian in that race took all but about three or four votes. That race would have been determined by three votes, if my math is correct, by just the two dominant parties, Republican and Democrat, had the Libertarian not been in there.
Huh.
Which says, you know, 481 people or whatever the number was not real excited about either candidate. But it is the frustration of special elections. There was a special election out west for, God rest his soul, Matt Gergely, one of our younger Democrat members, 43 years old, dropped dead suddenly. And so his race came up. And people have a tendency to see these as off elections or whatever you want to call them terminology-wise. We get real excited about presidential races. We get a little bit excited about gubernatorial races and depending who's running in local House and Senate races, which are 2 years and 4 years apart. Special elections, people don't pay attention to them. My guess would be 2 years from now that seat will flip.
I think so.
Well, there's going to be an awful lot of money and energy spent to make sure that happens.
So this is a special election, and it's only for the two remaining years.
Yeah.
Not a four-year. Normally, state senate is a four-year thing.
Correct. It will fulfill that term, and that person will have to run. Okay. Just like our gentleman who was running, well, the candidate that won that seat out west, you know, he'll get sworn in within the next week or two, and then by the end of December, they got to decide whether they want to run again, and they're going to run again in January.
Of 26.
Right. Okay. I mean, we've seen people who've got three-month terms, and then they're going to run all over again.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Well, the advertisers love it.
Yeah. We need to have a few more of those.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that would work out beautifully.
Those around here, you know.
But we're going to have an advertiser's job fair.
Yeah, okay. All right, state budget. Everybody wants to argue about the state budget. Governor's got his version. You probably have a version. Everybody has a version. What about the state budget right now? Are we going to run out of money?
No, not right now. You know, you hear about these structural deficits. As long as taxpayers keep paying taxes and the government has the ability to tax people, we don't necessarily run out of money. It's about running out of priorities or where to not running out of, running out of resources to fund everybody's priority. And that's the tough part. Everybody has their own priority. If I had $100 here and said, hey, we're going to go do something, we'd probably have at least three ideas what to do with that. And the democratic process is we've got to eventually get enough people, 102 in the House, 26 in the Senate, and a governor who's willing to support the majority of those ideas to move forward with that. The amount that gets spent is always a sticking point. For some, they don't ever want to see an increase. They don't take appreciation in for cost of living increases that occur. There's natural increases that occur, cost of insuring employees and whatever else, that generally your budget's going to increase somewhat each year. And, you know, what willingness do you have to make some cuts? It's easy to pound the pulpit and yell and scream about, we need cuts, we need to get this out of there, but what do you want to cut? Even some of my conservative friends who tell me this all the time come to me a week later and want a grant for their child's ball team because we think grant money is free money. Well, grant money is money that's been accumulated through other processes and put into different programs and serves some pretty good functions at times. But we sometimes, I think, have lost sight of where government money comes from. I don't care if it's local taxes, state taxes, or federal taxes, and we all want to look uphill to the next level of government to fund our issues.
Now, I mean, if the let's say the governor's budget sails through, which it won't, but let's say it does. All right, this fear that surplus is going to disappear, and I've seen stories we're going to have to dip into the rainy day fund to pay for all this. Is that true? Is that accurate?
Well, I look back to when I was majority leader, we had tucked a pretty good amount of money away. You know, we have kind of a checkbook on a day-to-day basis to pay bills and put up, deal with things that we don't expect to have happen. And we were about $7 million in the checkbook, $7 billion in the rainy day fund. And they have paired some of that away with some new programs. The really issue is, if you start new programs in addition to last year's budget, now you've encumbered yourself to needing more debt money to keep paying for these additional programs. I mean, you think about how you pay your debt off in your own home. You know what your income? If your income doesn't change this year, you're probably not getting a new car. There's a lot of nice ones out there I'd like to buy, or a boat or whatever else, and somehow you find a way to keep the car running that you have. Our biggest problem, I think, is you get lots of people, 253 legislators with lots of ideas and a governor who want to sometimes start new programs. You know, right now we've been slowly paring away the money that had been getting siphoned off the liquid fuels dollars to pay for roads and bridges, which most people agree on doing, that started going to pay for the state police. Well, that got up to almost $800 million out of our budget. That's shy of $1 billion to pay for state police services. And we've been paring that back at $125 million a year, subsequent to some legislation we passed, again, back when I was leader. And we were down to about $350 million, and now the governor wants to cut that paring down by in half, where a lot of us want to keep that on course because, one, it cuts the money where it belongs, because we have lots of people over here that want roads, bridges, potholes, and everything else, and road expansion. included in that, and yet we're siphoning the money off for other things. It's not an easy equation. It's kind of a prettiest process. But at the end of the day, we have to go back to taxpayers to find more money if there's going to be more spending. You know, structural deficits, we hear that term thrown around an awful lot. Because there are inherent costs that keep rising, whether it's our medical assistance, our own debt from borrowing that we've done for different projects over the years, the certain pension program, whatever else, people want paid. And we have an obligation to pay those debts. And so our goal several years ago was to try to really pare that stuff down aggressively. You know, the worst thing could happen for us is have a significant economic downturn, which we're praying is not going to happen. We get a little insulated around here, I think, in Center County, because Center County's economy has stayed relatively smooth. People were surprised when I said to them we actually had businesses opened up during COVID, you know, took some aggressive action. Obviously, other businesses may be liquidating, selling buildings they may not have wanted, but, you know, a smart investor knows this is the time to buy low, invest. That government doesn't necessarily have the same flexibility, but in return, sometimes I think our viewpoint here in Happy Valley is it's always rosy. And money's still flowing. Well, we've got some significant large employers here that keep things going even through rough times. When you're in these rural districts, you know, some of my guys have very little industry at all. Their schools are heavily reliant on property taxes, which nobody likes. You know, if there's one thing in addition to cancer people would say we would cure, it would be property taxes. But at the end of the day, they all still want their kids to have really nice ball fields and nice facilities and safe facilities. Security in the last 10 years has been a predominant issue within schools. When you and I went to school, we never worried about that. Security was a gym teacher. You grabbed a kid that was bashing something up and all things were taken care of. So there's a lot of different demands on lots of different levels of government, including our schools, townships, municipalities, they didn't have. I mean, look at the storms that blew through here. I don't think I've ever seen such storm damage. And frankly, I was pretty impressed with how fast things got cleaned up. We had trees that went down in Bellefonte that would have filled half this room just in their trunk. And that stuff got cleaned up pretty good. I called Bellefonte Borough, and they kept their biodegradable dump site open so people could bring branches and trees in, businesses and or people who are cleaning up privately. But those are significant costs that you don't generally account for.
Education. I mean, you touched on with the property taxes. Where is their agreement right now, and what is the biggest stumbling block right now between Republicans and Democrats in Pennsylvania?
As far as funding or funding source?
Well, let's start with funding source, because, I mean, since I was a kid, I've been hearing, that we got to change this, and it just never changes. Is it going to change anytime?
I don't see a significant sudden change, because it's not a matter of if you could suddenly somehow spend less money. It's about where does the money come from. You two have been around long enough. I had a proposal years ago. I worked with some individual friends of mine in the legislature that would take a sales tax, which one of the reasons I like the sales tax, it's some people consider it regressive, but I don't see it as that, because you and I, at least as consumers, have better control over our taxation when we consume things.
Yes.
The gentleman I have been working with happened to be a pretty successful business guy. He had no trouble paying $1,100 for a suit. I had a lot of trouble paying $120 for a suit. God bless JCPenney. Wish they were still here.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, you know, I could pay 6% on a $120 suit, and he was willing to pay it on a $1,100 suit.
Yep.
The point being is, we were actually going to lower the sales tax, but apply it more evenly across the field. The sales tax actually started as a tax for schools. You know, property tax has been some type of assessments back to the pioneer days. You know, what was the major thing that you owned somebody could put a levy on was your property. And in return, we have places across the Commonwealth, as I said, they pay a lot in property taxes because they don't have a lot of interest. And you can see it here. Just go out of Center County, 30 miles, anywhere outside the center region, and the property taxes are significantly higher. Yours in Penns Valley are pretty high. My brother lives in Phillipsburg. What's the major industry in Phillipsburg? And so they pay a little bit more. It's about trying to find a resource to flip where the money comes from. Because most people are not going to spend less. We historically spend more money in education every year than we ever have, whether it's the state or the locals. It's 40% of our overall state budget. 40% of the overall state budget happens to go to human services. 9% goes towards corrections, and that cost keeps going up. So quick math says that's darn near 90% of the budget. Somehow we pay for all the other services with 10%. But I do like the sales tax option only because you have some control over that as an individual taxpayer versus just a millage rate keep getting raised. At the end of the day, you got to find the willingness. And I think one of the things that has made politics so ugly and difficult is this mass communication through social media that our guys are now getting beat up about a bill that's proposed to run tomorrow. They don't even make a vote on it. It used to be you get beat up after you make the vote. Yeah. I always tell people, call me ahead of time. Tell me where you're on any bill. Beat me up all you want. But don't wait till after the vote's made in order to just express your opinion. But now with social media, our people are getting intimidated by people who want to lobby one way or another on any issue. You can name the issue, and it happens. And when you're getting 300 emails a day on one issue, it doesn't take long to have people find your cell numbers. Now we're getting text messages from organizations and individuals. You know, every time you go to a store and they say, would you like an e-receipt? Well, I hate to tell you, you're setting yourself up for a bombardment of mail because all this stuff gets sold by a large amount of these proprietors who get this. I don't give it out to anybody. Anyhow, that it is getting harder at the end of the day to get that equation. I don't care what you say about Harrisburg or what the process is. It boils down to one equation, 102 votes in the House, 26 in the Senate, and a governor's signature. So we try to come up with new ideas, get people to think a little bit different. There's only so many options in providing money for revenue for schools or anything. They get shot down before they even get started. That's frustrating. And everybody says, well, you know, we ought to charge radio stations. They're advertisers. They make money. We ought to charge this business or that business. Well, who do you think is providing the jobs in the community?
Yeah. Yeah. Even with the human resources and where we would agree that, man, this is worthwhile, these projects or these nonprofits, I do think it's worth, and it seems like there is at least some more of this going on, where, again, there's a limited amount of what can be spent by government. And even where we might agree, man, this is a great program, I would like to think we could agree that even where that is the case, government spending on it is not as efficient as the example I use all the time. If my neighbor I see is starving and I know what they've gone through. I know they just lost their job. Yep, here's $10 or $20. But I know. And if I see them out, boy, am I smoking dope there? You have more. Well, you don't know that, and there's no way to know it. And even if you did know it, again, the efficiency or lack thereof, by the time you collect my tax money and get it back to where it's going, it has been siphoned off. I've read various, a lot, various amounts, but it's a lot. Are we doing more within the government to look at, hey, maybe there's alternative ways rather than us paying for this, us being government? Yes, this is a great program. Can we talk to some of the businesses that, and instead of collecting taxes, maybe we cut them a little bit of a break here and they sign some sort of an agreement and they'll fund X program for the next 10 years or whatever it may be. Well, it just seems like there should be some more efficient ways to get the money where it needs to go, where we would all agree, yes, man, we want to see this program, but I don't know that the government is the one that should be providing that. And even I just don't think they can do it as effectively or efficiently as it ought to be done.
You and I, well, all three of us were probably within a couple of years of each other age-wise. And so when we were growing up, a lot of the services that are now expected to be done by government, and that's a big term, whatever level, were done by volunteer organizations. They were done by the churches. Sadly, we're seeing a lot of churches closing because people's manners and behaviors and interests are changing. But a lot of the benevolent organizations are struggling. And some of that's government's fault because we put so many restrictions on them. Simple thing is, all these, we don't want anyone to get sick at some hot dog stand or whatever else, but we put these stringent programs together for food handling. And it used to be the manager, as long as the manager had this food certification training, he was kind of accountable for all the people in there.
Yeah.
That a lot of things that you and I were accustomed to that social, civil organizations took care of have now fallen back on the government because people are dependent. People are living longer. We're seeing more and more people outliving their income. And predominantly, as you know, you spend last 2 years of your life spending majority of your health care costs in those last 2 years. So it is a accumulation of a lot of things. Pennsylvania, while Center County is somewhat unique, we are an aging state. And so now you have more people needing services than you have people going into the workforce. The workforce, I mean, it's amazing how many young people come to visit, or I see them at places and ask them what they're looking to do. And a lot of them want to be these video gamers for a living. You and I would have never dreamed of that. Yeah, you know, some are going to make some money. Some are going to make some money in the NIL issue that we started for students to try to, on the issue of fairness. You know, I worry about the poor punt returner who only gets 1 minute of glory if he doesn't drop the ball. That there's a lot of things that are competing for money now.
Yeah.
And I think we've made it difficult. And frankly, you look at your fire companies. Probably 30 years ago, you had 300,000 people serving as a volunteer fire company. We're one of a few states that are majority of our fire companies are volunteer. We're down to about 30,000. They used to have the Women's Auxiliary that helped out with their fire company. Well, go to any fire company meeting. I hate to tell you, the average age is 50 and above. So go put that turn-on gear on someday and go just go through the semantics of tearing a car apart or fighting a fire for an hour. And I guarantee you, you're going to be sitting along the sidelines sucking air and looking for water. I've done it. And, you know, while I'm a card-carrying member of the local fire companies and I try to support them where I can, I don't have the gusto to be able to do that, much less do it 3 o'clock in the morning when it's 5 degrees out. And one day we're going to lose them all, and then we're going to go to paid fire companies. People are going to say, why did my township millage go up another 1% or whatever? Because the volunteer system has fallen apart, and we're not able to do that. And that's a big, true reality that's coming. Most of your Kiwanis, Rotaries, all those groups, there are 8 or 9 people with them all the time, putting the same fundraisers together they've been doing for years, trying to exist. I see these in the veterans groups. You know, I met with a group of veterans in a neighboring county the other day, and this poor guy found out when he signed up for Social Security, I think it started Social Security disability, they put him in the wrong column, and now after a couple of years, they're told him, well, you're not going to be getting that amount of money anymore. So he made his life in retirement accustomed to this much money, and now he's going to pay him less because somebody screwed up paper-wise. So there's a lot of different levels of people having needs, and I don't know where all that's going to come from. And you go back to the workforce issue. When you have less people working and paying into the system, it is a problem. Therefore, that's where we start to see our structural deficits. Is the money flowing going to keep pace with that? You know, we've all been haunted by this boogeyman about Social Security going away someday. I have a hard time believing Congress is going to let that happen, regardless of when it is. It's about what's the pain going to be imposed on the taxpayers to keep that system going.
Yeah.
You know, you talked about raising retirement age by a year or two, whether private sector or to be qualified for Social Security, and people go bananas. But we do have some entities around here that are retiring at 50 and less. Well, I'm trying to remind people, you're going to probably live, barring something stupid, till you're 80, 90 years old. Can you fund 40 years of your life with 30 years of work?
Yeah, it's amazing.
But these are good, frank conversations most people don't have. It amazes me how when you talk to somebody, as you guys ask me, how are you doing? Great, I don't have any problems or whatever. Most people say, oh, boy, I just can't wait to retire. It's amazing how many people spend their career can't waiting to retire. What does that mean? You're going to sit in a rocking chair and wait for the old Grim Reaper to come?
Yeah.
You know, trying to get volunteers to come back in to help out with programs. I spoke to a woman the other day, wonderful lady, and she goes back into schools, and she's a para reader, and she helps students learn to read a little better. She was in a different profession, and they were lobbying a bill, I think, to put a minimum income level for these paras, and I think it was like $20 an hour. Well, she could probably go to Sheets and work for $20 an hour, have some other benefits. And as my dad, who did that, actually, he got laid off at 79 and a half in his third career, and he went to work for them until he was 87, 85, and he was happy as a lark because of free coffee and two hot dogs at the end of the night.
Sounds pretty good to me.
But, you know, all joking aside, you know, some people don't want to get back in the volunteer world. We make it difficult for a lot of the volunteers because now you got to have child clearances for a lot of things. You can't go help at a daycare. I mean, for me to read at my children's school, my grandchildren's school, I got to get all these clearances.
Yeah, I know a little bit about that one. That's a bit of a pain.
But it's frustrating, and I'm all about safety, just like the rest of you guys are. But if you're 50, 60, 70, and you think, well, I'd like to do something, nah, the heck with it, I'm not going to go through that. And you almost feel like a criminal, thinking, well, I didn't do anything wrong, but now I got to go through these clearances.
Always the unintended consequences. And yes, all of us want safety
but I would encourage your listeners, if they have any interest, to do that. We need that. There's so much wisdom. You guys, the experiences you've done in your career paths are phenomenal. Why wouldn't we want to try and inspire somebody else who's got a great voice, a great idea, energy and interest? I mean, you guys and I don't always agree, but I like the fact that you poke me once in a while to try to think about different about issues. Well, that's how you get good public policy.
Yeah. No, we need more civil discussion.
Yeah.
And we need more people, getting actively involved in the community. And somehow, I do think we've got to, and I don't know, I don't have the answer here, but we've got to strike a better balance between, yes, providing safety, but also, if it's an individual who is helping out at an event and is not having any one-on-one time with any of the kids, like, there's got to be a better balance there where we're allowing those opportunities to occur where I don't think we're putting anybody in danger. We're coming right
back. Take a break. Get that feeling. Get the
feeling. It's the Fox. Finally, the soundtrack of summer is returning to the airwaves here in Happy Valley. And it's doing so right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. This year's Pittsburgh Pirates offer a mix of veteran stars.
Andrew McCormick has won it! They're going crazy! The Pirates have won this game!
And perhaps baseball's newest shining star.
The 2-2. He got him, and he's done it again. Paul Skenes finishes strong.
Every game all season long brings the promise of new excitement.
The Bucks walk it off in grand fashion!
Don't miss the action of Pirates baseball this season. The Buccos are back here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Raise the Jolly Roger!
The Center Hall Farm Store is proud to serve our community as a small family business that provides big-time service. Folks, you can still stock up on those wood pellets this winter. The Center Hall Farm Store makes its own horse, cow, pig, chicken, and bird feeds and has a great variety of pet feeds for your needs. Open weekdays from 8 to 4 and Saturday from 8 to noon. Check us out at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall or on the web at centerhallfarmstore.com. That's centerhallfarmstore.com. The Center County Recycling and Refuse Authority is proud to support local sports here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Check out our website at centercountyrecycles.org for employment opportunities, upcoming events, the authority's newsletter, and details on what can and can't be recycled, as well as updated schedules. That's centercountyrecycles.org. Once again, the website is centercountyrecycles.org.
If you're like me, you have neighbors that have zero-turn mowers, and some are satisfied and others not so much. I've had neighbors come over while I'm mowing with my Kubota and want to try it out. I told Bob and Clyde, you need to get to Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64, for Kubota. I have a Z200 25 horsepower with the simplest operation and a pristine cut every time, even though I have a lawn and, shall we say, a challenging bank, ditch, and of course the wife's ornamental bushes. If you're trying to decide on a great lawn care machine, get to Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. At Daughter Equipment, they're experts on Kubota lawn care machines that keep you moving quickly and efficiently. Your destination for Kubota is Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. You may even meet my neighbors, Bob and Clyde.
It's Let's Talk here on a Thursday. Jeff Byers, Scott Giese, and Representative Kerry Benninghoff joining us in studio here on this, very nice-looking Thursday at that. Opening day for the Pirates. Again, we'll have Buccos baseball for you coming up at 3:40 this afternoon.
Ironhead, I don't think we're getting the radio station grant. I don't think we're getting that.
Well, we'll be outside collecting with a can.
We need to reapply. Yeah.
That would be better. I didn't fill out
the paperwork properly.
All right, I want to ask about Rockview, but real quick, we were chatting during the break, having some fun. I get this card, Kerry, in the mail the other day because I'm now a mature driver. Again, take out mature and put in the words old fart. So apparently, if I take this PennDOT improvement course, I can save 5% on my vehicle insurance, but I have to pay for the course. This is pointless.
There's always a catch. Did that come from the state or from an insurer?
PennDOT. This is a I had to renew my driver's license.
Okay.
This is ridiculous.
Well, we're encouraging safety. It's all about the children, and it's all about you. We want to keep people safe on the road.
Also, Kerry, my beef with this is it is discriminatory against those of us that are immature and still driving.
That'd be him, by the way.
You do know you're getting older when your mail is about, have you made your funeral arrangements?
Do not.
AARP. Do you have enough life insurance in case something happens today?
Yep.
And I'm thinking, wow, I didn't like to go to the mail. Three out of four are pretty depressing.
Yes, that's bad. Yes. All right, now we went way long in the last segment, so this is going to be brief. All right, the Rockview prison closing. First of all, were you surprised when the governor spilled the beans? And Rockview, now again, Mr. Takac was with us Friday. Rockview's in his zone.
Correct.
It's not in your next door. So
yeah, I live about 3 miles from it.
What do you think about all this?
Well, Paul and I have actually worked on this together and talked about it. Our frustration is, number one, between that and Quihana. Quihana is a little bit different style. It's kind of a boot camp prison in Clearfield. None of us know what the impetus of all this is. What was the catalyst? Why are we doing this? They tried to tell us during the budget hearings, well, there was a commission. Well, who was on the commission? Well, there was three people. Nothing was really very open and transparent. My belief is, if there's the severity of the problems and the cost is, cost ineffective to fix these things, okay, well, why don't you get the delegation of local legislators, because we actually work together more than people think we do, and walk us through it and say, listen, these are the problems, it's going to cost us this, in order to fix that. They're talking about a cost of about $10 million a year. Well, I'll tell you, there's four prisons already that have been closed and are mothballed. We have at least four intellectual disability centers across the Commonwealth that have been closed and mothballed. But we spend thousands and thousands, maybe millions of dollars a year just mowing the grass. Why? Well, over 100 years ago, the state took the majority of the great agricultural properties and built these centers on them with the idea they could be self-sustaining, raise their own food and crops or whatever else, and give some work to the people who lived there, whether they're inmates or the intellectual disability, teach them some different trades. Well, we don't do that as much anymore. The private sector got involved and they wanted to be able to sell commodities to these institutions, and the cost of productivity was just cost prohibitive. My point being is we have acreage and lots of acres sitting around, lots of vacant buildings. Why aren't we dispersing of them, sell them, get rid of them? You can't be saving money if you're mothballing buildings. And we have a lot of them sitting around. I think it's ridiculous. At $10 million a year, the alleged savings from closing Rockview and Quihana doesn't make sense to me. Now, you can tell me and show me, I'm okay. But at the end of the day, it's a lot of displacement of people. And frankly, the Quihana, which is more of a boot camp, I suspect has a lot lower recidivism rate. And the goal is to get people, if your belief in corrections is, it's punitive for what you did wrong, and hopefully corrective to change behavior and get people back active in society.
How much open ground does Rockview have?
Well, technically, it's about 5,700 acres. My guess would be if you drive from State College or the mall towards Pleasant Gap, everything to the right of 26 will probably still stay in ownership because that's where the reservoir is, that's where the nursery is, and the wood products. Rockview and Benner, they build picnic tables for other state institutions around. They build some extra, some nice furniture. They sell some firewood. So there's commodities that they are able to have the inmates process and learn from. So I think a lot of that will stay. It's really that main building there, of which several of the wings are not very good. But, you know, I've been in and out of there when I was county coroner. I've seen the facility. I'm familiar. And it is the second largest, oldest prison. But it just seemed arbitrary to us, at least the local delegation, of why did you pick two so close in proximity?
Yes.
Rockview, I get, because it's older, but as far as impact on communities, and I speak not just to Center County, the community that funnels that and feeds it with employees is probably five counties in circumference around that facility. This is pretty significant job loss, and you're in Clearfield, Huntington, Lewistown, in those areas to lose 50, 60, 80, whatever jobs of those employees coming here. I just think it was poor from a transparency perspective, poorly administrated from the perspective that we only heard about it in the governor's budget address, and we're not even told where it was going to be, and then you just get this media release. Benner Township told me they found out an hour beforehand. And I just don't think that's a wow. transparent, proper way to do it.
A couple of follow-up questions. What were you told as to with the properties that have been vacated? Basically, what were you told in terms of why don't we sell those and get some revenue? And secondly, is that who makes that decision? Is that solely the governor or
no? Department General Services.
Okay.
And frankly, I'm still trying to get some answers on that. I'm working on trying to collectively find out what it is we're spending on all those facilities. I have visited many of the intellectual disability centers, some before they closed. And philosophically, I am not opposed to the idea that we're trying to get people in more community-based settings and not institutionalize people and put them off far-off lands because of the philosophy that was 100 years ago. So I supported that. But at the end of the day, why hold on to them? And some of them were very badly designed from the standpoint that they had a centralized heating system which went out all over and fed the other buildings. Well, as they slowly closed the building and then you had cut that pipe going off there. But you would never build any of those institutions like that again. So sell them, liquidate them. Laurelton, beautiful facility down there, just sitting there. For what? Put it up to the private sector, turn it back into agriculture, if nothing else, make it productive land, and get it back on the taxpayers' rolls. All these things are all taxpayer rule, and that's what cripples Benner. Benner, between what the university owns, the airport owns, and corrections owns, they got a lot of acreage that's not taxed, and that goes back to our earlier story. Who pays the difference on that? The average homeowner pays higher taxes because these entities do not pay taxes. I left him almost speechless. You see that?
Numbers don't add up. Yeah, numbers don't add up.
Can the legislature, is there a rule there where you can, we are going to sell off these properties?
We are working on trying to do that. They'll give you 100 different reasons to delay this. Well, we got to study this, whatever else the issue is. But, you know, we are working on trying to get answers to that. Why is that? Is there some order of wanting to do that? I believe Senator Argel, a good friend of mine, used to be in the House. He has a proposal in as well to try to get a analysis of what properties are, and not just these ones I named to you. There are other state facilities. Drive down into Harrisburg, and there's Harrisburg State Hospital. Again, beautiful property, just sitting there, but somebody's going over checking them. You got security goes through these places at times, and I don't know if any of them have water flowing in them, so you'd have to heat whatever building may or may not have them. But nonetheless, get them off the state's ownership, put them in the private sector. And I'm not saying you got to develop every one of them, but like I said, put them back in agriculture. We're having less and less agriculture land than we used to. But there's a lot of other things they could be sold for, which would help lower everyone else's tax liability because now you have other tax money coming in. I just think it's – but that should be part of the whole Rockview discussion too. And I would have thought that the local delegation would have had some preliminary thing. We found out when you found out, and I think that's inappropriate. Not that I deserve prior information, but at the end of the day, who do you think gets the phone calls to try to answer that? Not the governor's office. My guess would be, he said, I want to look like I'm saving money. Close me two prisons. Because it didn't seem to be a lot of thought process, and I have friends who worked in or around corrections. Nobody seems to know who was on this commission. And very few commissions are three people.
Yeah, that's not very, that surprised me when you said three people. I'm thinking
that. Well, that's what they answered at the appropriations hearing. And when you try to ask who was on the commission, well, you know.
Okay, so there's a lot of questions.
Right.
He's asking. Okay. Unfortunately, we're out of time.
Yeah. Well,
we could keep
that is time unfortunate. For man.
We'll just
we're going to stay on it, and we'll keep you up to date where we can.
Please do.
We're trying to get some answers. Sadly, we'll say one last thing if I could.
Yeah.
You know, we passed a bill in 2018, Act 13, which requires them to have stakeholders meetings. Well, it seems like it's after the fact. You know, let the horse out of the gate, and now we're going to go around and say, oh, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? And you know what's going to happen. Then, okay, we listen to everybody, but we're still closing them. That's frustrating.
Yes.
If I had a crystal ball, that's my prediction of what's probably going to happen.
A little backwards.
A
little backwards in the process.
Well, thank you guys for taking your interest in keeping the public informed.
Appreciate your time.
Yep.
Just added to my complaint list. Thanks, Carrie.
Okay, call Paul. His number is 237.
Yeah, leave us that form for the radio station grant. What the heck? We'll fill it out anyway. Just for
Just call 1-800-LOVE, and we'll send you all the money you want.
Okay, there you go. That's not good.